Hello, what's good, everybody? Thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday takeover show of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next half hour or so, as we go over some preparations for the Kentucky Derby with Keeneland Dan of FatBaldGuyRacing.com. We'll also talk about the Kentucky Oaks and discuss some of the things coming up here this weekend at Churchill Downs. I'm sure Dan will have some other great thoughts for the races that will happen in between the Kentucky Oaks and the Kentucky Derby. Before we do that, I want to mention a few things that are going on over at bangthebook.com. Of course, you already know on Mondays and Thursdays, we have the Bettors Box, our MLB betting podcast hosted by myself. Also going on over at the website right now, three contests for you to take advantage of: our daily streaker contest, also our monthly pick of the day, then some other monthly cash prizes available for the top win percentage, top ROI, and also top amount of units won. Some great write-ups on NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs, and also daily Major League Baseball stuff over there at bangthebook.com. So some great stuff going on over there. All right, we'll go ahead and bring on today's first and only guest. That is the great Keeneland Dan from FatBaldGuyRacing.com. Dan, how are you today, sir?
Good. Calm before the storm.
That's for sure. Absolutely. Good to get you back on the program here. I know it's been a while. We talked to you about a year ago at this time in the lead-up to the Kentucky Derby. Just give us a little bit of a refresher there on last year's race, how everything played out, and how you guys did over there at Fat Bald Guy Racing.
Yeah, last year was pretty good. You know, I mean, we had a couple guys hit the late pick five for $25,000. I know they had to go pretty deep to get there other than the Derby, but it worked out for a few people. I know one of my best buddies had it, so I was happy for him too. But, you know, the Derby was chalky, a lot like we figured it was going to be. You know, going in, it looked like it was a two-horse race, and it turned out to be. And I think the track played into to who actually won the race with Nyquist because, you know, the kind of the pattern the whole week was horses that were close, that were stalking, that didn't get too far out of it, you know, ran 1-2 pretty much every race. And that's what happened with Nyquist. He got the perfect trip, and you know, the track kind of carried him into the lead, and then, you know, Exaggerator just couldn't get him. And, of course, that was reversed a couple weeks later. But, you know, that's just kind of the way we figured it was going to be, and we're glad that it worked out like that for a lot of our members.
All right, so before we get into the two main events here this weekend, the Kentucky Oaks and also the Kentucky Derby, and then we'll see if you have any thoughts on any of the other races that'll fall in between. Let's do some more generic stuff here, Dan. Let's talk a little bit because – you know, I mean, this is obviously the biggest weekend of horse racing out there in the industry. But, you know, horse racing happens every day across the country, across the world. You know, you have the opportunity to go to your online race book or, you know, go to the brick and mortar race book and put your bets down. So in terms of the process that you go through, what would be some of the tips that you have for maybe some of the people that are starting out?
Well, I always tell people when they're starting out that the first thing you got to do is look at class. And you can tell by the form on with the money, you know, who's running for the most money, you know, who's consistently been running the last three or four races for the most money, and are they dropping in class? And I try to compare it to make it easy for people. You know, anybody that watches sports, you know, the easiest comparison, because everybody seems to watch the NFL, if you take an average NFL player and put them in college, obviously they're an all-star. Well, if you take that same player and put him in high school, he's going to be a phenom. You take that same player and put him in eighth grade football, and he's going to absolutely crush everybody. And that's kind of the same way horse racing is, that, you know, there's levels like that, and you've got to be able to pay attention to the levels, because just because a guy, you know, a horse is slow at the top level doesn't mean he won't crush if he drops a couple levels in class. And so that's the biggest thing. You've got to be able to know class. And the buyer's speed figures help people with that these days. It makes it actually a lot easier for the amateur player, because you can look at the buyer's speed figures that are in the racing form, and the higher the number, the better. And those horses that, like, just for example, if everybody in the race is running 60s and 62s and 63s, and there's a horse in there running 70s, well, that horse is probably going to win unless he gets upset or, you know, there's some other factors involved. But, you know, it gives you a gauge on, you know, you can take the horses that are running in the higher 60s to maybe upset the horse. But you want to definitely pay attention to that, especially if you don't have a lot of time to invest into it.
All right. Now, one of the important things about handicapping, whether it's sports, horses, greyhounds, whatever the case may be, is bankroll. You know, bankroll size is very, very important to a whole lot of people. Let's say somebody's going in there with a couple $100. They just want to hang out, drink a few pops, and, you know, have a good time with some friends. Maybe they take the wife and kids, whatever the case may be. They walk in with a couple $100, and there are a lot of different bet types that are out there. I'm sure a lot of our listeners know. But the really basic ones, trifecta, exacta, superfecta, win, place, show, all those type of things. If you're walking in there with a couple $100, Dan, what would you recommend in terms of a strategy for people?
What I tell people is if you got a smaller budget like that, look at the daily doubles. You can make a $2 or $3 or $4 daily double that covers two races. And, you know, if you hit the first race, you know, obviously you got to hit the second race too, but it covers you from having to bet again too. So if you bet, you know, take two horses in the first race with two horses in the second race, it'll cost you $8 for two, but it covers you for both races. So as long as you get the first one home, you don't even have to bet the second race. You can sit and have a cheeseburger and just see if you hit the bet. And, you know, it makes your bankroll go further to me. And then you can also see the, what we call the will pays, you know, up on the screen, so you can kind of see what you're going to get, you know, before you even play it. I mean, they tell you exactly the amount of money you're going to get. And, you know, if you want to play a little bit bigger, of course, you can play a $5, $6, $10 one or whatever. And you can pick your spots too. You don't, you know, if you don't like a race, you can skip that race and then bet the daily double in the next two races. I just think on a small budget, your best chance to come out ahead is to either bet straight or bet daily doubles, because it's hard enough to pick the winner. You know, people that go in there with $100 or $200 and are trying to bet superfectas and trifectas, I mean, you're almost better betting your birth dates than to try to predict the horse that's going to run second, third, and fourth in a race, you know, when you only go once every couple months. It's just too hard.
Well, it's something that's really interesting here about the Kentucky Derby, and we'll start looking ahead to this weekend at Churchill Downs, and we'll go in depth on the Kentucky Oaks first in terms of a chronological sense. But, you know, overall, this is sort of one of those things, a lot like the Super Bowl, where you get a lot of public investment here. People that really haven't been paying too much attention, you know, for those that don't know, there's a Road to the Kentucky Oaks, Road to the Kentucky Derby. There's some very important races that take place for these three-year-olds before the main events here coming up this weekend. So, Dan, in terms of those, we'll start with the Kentucky Oaks here. You know, you try to grade how these horses have done in the lead up. You try to figure out which of these, you know, pre-Kentucky Oaks events are the ones that mean the most. In terms of results, which ones are the most impressive to you?
Well, and that's the thing, is every year it's different, and that's the hardest part. With, like, this year, the most important prelude to the Oaks is the Santa Anita Oaks, because you have two of the favorites that just came out of that race, and one of the fillies won by 10 lengths. So, you know, Paradise Woods is going to go off a prohibitive favorite, I would think, in the Kentucky Oaks. And then the filly she beat, Abel Tasman, will probably be right behind her as the second or third choice. So obviously when you have the two best horses coming out of the same race, that's one you definitely have to look at. And then up in New York, the Gazelle was a good race for Miss Sky Warrior, who, you know, I don't know if she wants this kind of distance. I don't know if she's going to get, you know, against this quality of a horse. She's never faced anything like she's going to face on Friday, but she's got a big chance for Kelly Breen, and Paco Lopez will obviously try to go close to the front. Then you got the Fairgrounds Oaks winner, Pharrell, that's going to be up near the lead too. So the Kentucky Oaks is going to be an interesting race, just because three of the four top horses are all going to want to be 1, 2, 3 out of the gate. And they're going to try to stay 1, 2, 3 all the way around, which going a mile and an eighth for fillies at this time of year for three-year-old fillies is a big separator. You know, the fillies usually like big-time long distances at this time in their careers. They're still young and still trying to figure themselves out. And that's why Abel Tasman's got such a big, big chance, because she's one of the few that wants this kind of distance and I think will relish this kind of distance. Now, can she make up 10 lengths on Paradise Woods? I'm not sure. But she's one that when they turn for home won't be looking for a place to lay down. She'll be just getting going at that point. So she's got a big chance.
The length thing that you bring up is really interesting. So for the most part, a lot of the lead up, the road to the Kentucky Oaks races are of the shorter variety. They're shorter than the Kentucky Oaks.
Yeah, they're all mile and 16th races. Just about every prep race is a mile and 16th, except the Gazelle at Aqueduct, which is a mile and an eighth. But the Gazelle usually doesn't draw the better horses, so even though it's the same distance, it's way less quality of horse, where, you know, the Fantasy at Oaklawn Park is only a mile and 16th. The Ashland at Kentucky is only a mile and 16th. The Santa Anita Oaks is only a mile and a 16th. The Gulfstream Park Oaks is only a mile and 16th. So you have to gauge on who's going to get that extra furlong. And the other thing is, the extra furlong at Churchill is a real true furlong. And what I mean by that is, there's some tracks like Gulfstream Park and Santa Anita where you can fake it. I mean, that's a conveyor belt. They're really hard racetracks, and when you get in front, you just keep going. The racetrack almost carries you to the finish line, and the other horses are just kind of spinning their wheels, and they can't catch up. Where Churchill, of all racetracks in America, is the most fair racetrack, and it's a deep racetrack. It's a tiring racetrack, and it's a long stretch. So when you turn for home, there's been many, many, many horses in the great in the Oaks and the Derby that look like the winner when they turn for home, and they get caught because it's a grueling mile and an eighth. And those fillies get so wound up before the race. They got all these people wearing pink. They're all looking around like, what's going on? All these people, they've never been around all this before. And it's kind of like taking a teenage girl, you know, 14, 15-year-old teenage girl, and putting her on a basketball court in front of 30,000 people. She's going to be scared to death. She's going to be nervous. She's going to be looking around for her mom and dad, you know, on, oh, my God, I need some reassurance here. Can I do this? And that's what these fillies go through. I mean, the ones that are even the most confident ones, you know, they still get nervous. So a lot of times they use a lot of that energy to where when they turn for home, they are completely out of gas. And that's why you definitely want ones that have the class and have the back class and the breeding to be able to get that last furlong, and even have the trainers. I mean, there's certain trainers that just don't train for horses to go that far. They train for speed. And, you know, the two favorites both have, you know, Hall of Fame trainers, and Richard Mandela and Bob Baffert, that know how to get it done. And that's why ultimately I think it'll probably come down to those two when they turn for home.
So you're definitely looking at those two, which obviously, you know, there are some different betting opportunities with that. Who do you think slides up into that third position then?
Well, I think there's some fillies that Daddy's Little Darling, trained by Kenny McPeak, will be coming late. I think she's probably a notch below these horses, but I think she'll get the distance. And that, again, that's the big key. I mean, she's not going to look for a place to lay down. She's going to be way, way back early. And then she'll probably just come plodding down the middle of the track to pick up the pieces. But, you know, the other ones will probably be farther ahead. But I think she's one that you can definitely think at 15 or 20 to 1 that's going to come running late. And then there's another one trained by Steve Asmussen named Ever So Clever that was a big shocking upset winner of the Fantasy down at Oaklawn Park at 15 to 1, where she had the parking lot post position, the 12 hole, and still managed to come six wide down the stretch and run past a bunch of fillies at the end. Where, you know, if she does that same similar type trip, you know, she'll be coming late. Now, is she fast enough again to get to the top two? Probably not. I think the top two are just, you know, by the numbers, they're just too fast for everybody else. But if I was looking at a trifecta or something like that, Ever So Clever and Daddy's Little Darling would be in my third hole for sure. And then one of the other favorites named Salty. I don't know if Salty can beat the two California horses, but she's really good, and she's coming up from Florida. And, you know, I think she'll get the distance. I just don't know if she's raced enough and if she's seasoned enough to beat these two monsters from California. But those would be the three that I would take in the third spot.
All right, let's go over to the Kentucky Derby here, and I want to start, before we talk specifically about this race, I want to talk about some of the people that you have to handicap, as well as the horses. We talked a little bit there in passing with the trainers. We haven't mentioned the jockeys yet. We'll do that here in a second. But there are some trainers that definitely stand out above the rest of the field here. When you talk about these premier races, Are those guys that you tend to gravitate towards right away when you start looking at the card?
Well, in a lot of the other races I do, what's really ironic about the Kentucky Derby lately is so many new trainers have won it in the last 10 years. It just seems like, you know, all these new trainers have suddenly started to get a more fair playing field, I guess you would say, since the drug testing has really gotten serious since 2008. You know, when Big Brown won the Derby, the 10 previous years, it always seemed to be the same type trainers and owners that always had the horses. But as soon as the drug testing hit, all of a sudden seven new trainers in 10, 11 years have won it. And I don't know if that has anything to do with each other, but I think it's what it's created is just more of a, you know, the best animals, you know, without any help are getting, you know, to the Derby, and they're getting a chance to run against other animals that are not juiced up either. And, you know, I think it's just become a more fair playground to where you're seeing slower numbers, but they're real numbers. They're not blown up numbers, just like we do in the Olympics. You know, it's just, you know, when it's a fair playing field and nobody's cheating, you know, you get a way more fair race. And so it's been a lot more spread out. I mean, the Ian Wilkes of the world are still trying. You know, he was very integral with Street Sense a few years ago. And getting him to the Derby and working with that team. And now he's in charge, and, you know, he's got McCracken, who's got a big chance, even though his numbers are light. But, you know, he's the only one in the field with three wins at Churchill. You know, and will that become a factor? I think it will, and I think at 10-1 or so, I think, you know, he may be bet down to 8 or 9-1, but he'll probably be somewhere 8, 9, 10-1. That's a heck of a thing, I think, for a horse that's already got – you know, three wins. Now he's got to get faster, but there's no American Pharaohs in here. There's no California Chromes. There's nobody that you can look at and say, wow, he'll probably win the Triple Crown if he stays healthy. There is no horse like that this year. There's a couple of them that are at the top that all kind of look alike. And then once you get past the top three or so, you know, 4, 5, 6 look a little bit alike. And then, man, from 7 to 12, they all look alike. So, you know, if one of the top three don't win, then it could be a wild result. But, you know, I think one of the top three will win if they get the right trips and nobody gets scratched going into Saturday.
Well, Doug O'Neill, the only trainer to win twice here, dating to 2002 when Bob Backup wins with War Emblem, and then in 2015 with American Pharaoh, who obviously is one of the greatest horses we've ever seen, especially going on and winning the Breeders' Cup Classic as well.
Right.
You know, so in that respect, like you said, it seems like the playing field narrowed a little bit more here by trainer. Now, for somebody like me who follows this kind of on the outside, and then, of course, when the Triple Crown rolls around, I start paying a lot more attention to it just by the nature of the business I'm in. Do you feel like some of the horses with trainers like Baffert, like Todd Pletcher, you know, may be kind of inflated a little bit price-wise?
Well, I mean, like Pletcher's just got too many of them, so they can't all be bet on. You know, and Doug O'Neill's horse is going to be inflated because he's only won one race. Irap, you know, he's going to be kind of, I mean, he looks like a rank outsider on paper, so, you know, he's going to be a blown up big price. And, you know, in a 20 horse field, it's funny how many horses end up being about 15 to 25 to 1, somewhere in there, because there's so many people that don't know anything about horse racing that's betting on this race that they bet their $2 on the color or the name or, you know, whatever, that it's hard to even go off above 30-1 because there's always some $2 person out there betting on them, you know, trying to take a stab at a long shot. So, I mean, even the favorites, like I would think, unless something really changes in the next few days, I would think Classic Empire is going to be somewhere around 4-1, 9-2, and that's going to be your favorite. I mean, there's not going to be a 2-1 in this Derby. So, I mean, even if you like Classic Empire, he's going to be the favorite, and I think he's one of the three that can win. You know, he's going to be a heck of a price if you just want to bet on him.
Well, along with the trainers here, the jockeys obviously have a lot do with how things play out here in this race. And there's a reason that as you look down at the winning jockeys in past Kentucky Derbies, you see a lot of repeat guys. Mario Gutierrez has got 2016 and 2012, both with Doug O'Neill horses. Victor Espinosa, back-to-back with American Pharoah, California Chrome. Joel Rosario's a guy that's up there. Obviously, Calvin Burrell, a guy who almost always seems to have a chance here in the Kentucky Derby. How much do jockeys play into the equation for you, Dan?
Well, I look at the top jockeys. There's no question about it. I don't really look at who's won the Derby and who hasn't. I look at just who are the best jockeys. And, you know, it seems to play out that way every year that the best jockeys in the country, especially the Midwest and New York jockeys, end up on a lot of good horses. And then, you know, recently, you know, Victor Espinosa's got, you know, a couple really good mounts when the California horses were starting to dominate. But now that the California horses are kind of come back to earth a little bit this year, you know, the Johnny V, you know, being on Always Dreaming is gigantic, I think. I mean, you really got to look at Always Dreaming because you got Pletcher and you got Velasquez. And, you know, you got a horse that they went and they got back in the winter. I mean, they did not have this horse, you know, as a two-year-old, and they didn't get this horse into their program until the winter when they obviously saw something. And, you know, the Brooklyn boys knew enough to get Pletcher involved in this horse because they knew that this horse had a chance to win the Kentucky Derby, and they got him right to Todd Pletcher. From what I was told, somewhere in November, December, he got a hold of this horse and got into their training program. And then Javier Castellanos riding Guinevere for Antonio Sano, who's, you know, obviously a great story, the whole kidnap story and all that stuff. You know, it'd be great to see him win. But Castellanos is one of the top two or three riders in the country. So, you know, neither of those guys have really dominated the Kentucky Derby, but they've dominated Grade One racing all across the country for the last 4 or 5 years. And, you know, they're on two of the better horses, and they obviously got a big chance. And then on the flip side, you know, Classic Empire's got Julien Le Perrou. Now, I'm not saying Julien Le Perrou hasn't won some big races, because he has, and he has had some really nice rides in some big races, but he's also, of all the top guys, had some unbelievably terrible, just, you know, just horrible mounts, to where, like, he had Union Rags a couple years ago in the Derby and just absolutely got him crushed. You know, there's a horse named Ossie Siempre that he rode in the Breeders' Cup a few years ago that the poor thing got crushed. And, you know, when you have those rides, I think it weighs in the back of your head that, okay, 20-horse field, I'm on one of the favorites, I can't get him crushed. And so Julien Le Perrou is going to be extremely nervous before the Kentucky Derby. You know, can he give this horse a good ride? You know, you're on the favorite. You're going to have to be somewhere third, fourth, fifth, or sixth with this horse. If he's way back with this horse, getting this horse crushed, you know, there's going to be a lot of people across the country on him about it. So he's got a ton of pressure on him. And, you know, that's the only knock. When you look at Classic Empire, that's the only knock on this horse is, can Julien give this horse a clean trip? So it can go both ways.
So you've got Classic Empire and Always Dreaming up there at the top of the board, and obviously the post position draw coming up on Wednesday will have an impact on what happens with some of these numbers. So who's your third favorite? Is it something like Irish Warcry? Is it McCracken? Who do you think it is?
Yeah, McCracken's my third horse. Those are the three that I'm going to play in most of my pick threes and doubles and pick fours and things. I'll have Always Dreaming, McCracken, and Classic Empire on most of my tickets. Now, you know, there's one other horse that I'll probably use a little bit, and that's Practical Joke, who will probably be 15 to 20 to 1. I know most analysts are going to say that Practical Joke cannot get the distance, and on paper it looks like he probably can. His breeding is not there to get this kind of distance, but the one thing he's got going for him, actually two things, Chad Brown is very, very well known for distance horses. You know, if anybody can get a horse to go a mile and a quarter, a mile and a half, it's Chad Brown. I mean, normally he has big-time turf horses, but it's the same philosophy, the same kind of training to try to get this horse to get this distance. And the other thing he's got going for him is he's only had two starts. And the one big thing about that is from January 1 until the Derby, Practical Joke's only had two starts. McCracken's only had two starts. Classic Empire's only had two starts. Eight of the last 10 Derby winners have only had two starts from January 1 to the Derby. It's been a trend now for 10 years with these trainers to not run them near as much. It used to be voodoo, but now it's, you know, train them, and only run them a couple of times and get them to peak in that third race you know, their third race of the year in the Derby, and it's really, really been successful. You know, California Chrome and Orb are the only two horses to win in 10 years that have had more than two starts after January 1 into the Derby. So when you're looking at the field, Classic Empire's had two, McCracken's had two, Practical Joke's had two. I mean, all three of those horses have only had two starts. All the rest of the competition have all had three and four starts. So does the trend continue? You know, I got to at least put him on a ticket somewhere, even if it doesn't look like he can get the distance, because if he leaps forward in that third start, he could be right there in the middle of the lane at 20-1.
So obviously post position, very important, and that means where the horses start in terms of the gate. Again, that information coming out here on Wednesday. Dan, when you start to see that information, what does that mean to you?
Oh, it's a big thing for some horses. Like, obviously, you don't want to draw the one hole. That's a death trap with 20-horse field. And with Classic Empire, because of the jockey, it's going to be very important that he draws somewhere towards the outside. I'd want him somewhere 11, 12 on out, even if he draws the 20. You know, I'm okay if they're in the 18, 19, 20, if they're good enough to win. You know, I'll have another one from the 19. Big brown one from the 20. You know, I'd rather be outside of horses and, you know, give my jockey and give my horse a chance to win than be in the 1, 2, 3, 4 holes where they can get absolutely crushed going into that first turn. Because once they're crushed, it's over. You know, you're not going to win once you get crushed in a 20-horse field. So you might give up some ground on the outside, but it's better to be out there if you've got the horse.
Are there any that you're hoping are kind of on the inside? I mean, you know, I know you mentioned Classic Empire hoping that he's on the outside. Is there anybody that would, you know, do well with a draw, maybe 4 through 8, somewhere in there?
You know, any horse that's kind of a long shot to just come on late and try to hit the board, you know, maybe a J-Boy's Echo or a Tap Wit, you know, that's probably too slow to win. But, you know, by getting that inside post, they can just drop back early. Don't have to worry about getting crushed because they're going to be way back anyway. And then they're going to make that one run. You know, you make that one run towards, you know, in the stretch to just try to pick up the pieces. If you're any kind of horse that's going to be close to the lead, you don't want to be in that inside 4 or 5. Now 6, 7, and 8, that's not the end of the world. If you can get out and beat all those horses, those first 100 yards, and get them in position, you know, that's not a bad thing. But the problem is a lot of them get crushed. And, you know, you come out one hair slow, you're in deep trouble, unless you've got somebody like Seattle Slough that came out a step slow and still weaved his way through and won anyway, because he was one of the best horses of all time. And I don't think we're seeing that on Saturday. I think we're seeing some pretty good horses, a couple that have a chance to be really good down the road. And I think of the whole field, though, to be honest with you, the only horse I just do not have a good grasp on is Always Dreaming. I don't know how good he is. I mean, he could be really special, or I could be really overrating him, because he just hasn't run enough against the big-time competition to know. I know he's going to love the distance. I know he's fast. I know he's Todd Pletcher and Johnny V, and I know he's probably going to be sitting second, third, or fourth in the middle of the backside, and we're going to find out real quick how good he is, because if he's really good and if he can do what his dad did and get to the lead in the middle of the stretch, they may not catch him. You know, and his dad's Bodemeister. His dad had a little distance limitation. I don't think he will. His races so far, I mean, he's running home faster than he's starting, and he's still starting pretty close to the front. So, you know, it's hard to catch a horse that doesn't stop running, and I have a feeling he may not stop running.
I don't know offhand, and it's obviously a little bit tough to do this earlier in the week when, again, like I said, we don't have post positions drawn for the Oaks or the Derby yet. Are there any horses in between, maybe Saturday afternoon, something like that you're looking at that you can possibly throw out to our listeners?
No, because we don't have racing forms yet. I don't even know who's running yet.
All right, fair enough. Let's talk about this then. I know you're going down to Churchill Downs again. I know it's something that you've done for a while now. Just sort of walk us through that experience for anybody that, you know, wants to get there at some point in their lifetime.
Oh, it's definitely experience like no other. I mean, there's just I've been to Breeders' Cups. I've been to several of them. I've been to other racetracks. I've been to other racing events. I've been on Indianapolis 500. I've been to different NASCAR races. I've been to the Final Four. You know, I've been to a lot of places, and there's just nothing like the Kentucky Derby. I mean, to have 150,000 people all there to watch one race, to see them coming out on the track and see everybody singing along to the old Kentucky home and just watching at the nerves. And I've always said that if the one thing I want to do in my life that I have not done is owned a horse that ran in the Kentucky Derby to get to experience the walk over. Don't know what they do is they all start in the barn, and when the horses walk over to the paddock, all the owners, every single person that owns that horse, is allowed to walk with the horse and the trainer and the groom all the way from the barn to the paddock, and that's all the way down that first turn and around. And when those horses start to walk over, everybody at that track just stops and freezes and watches that. Everybody pulls out their binoculars, and I mean, it's just something special to watch all those horses and that sea of people all coming over with all the dreams that they're going to win, all the blood, sweat, and tears to get a horse to this point. And, you know, that's a lot of people don't think about that. You know, there's probably 30,000 or so foals, you know, and then you got 20 of them that run, and they only get one chance. I mean, there's been so many super horses like Arrogate and AP Indy and horses like that that just never got a chance to run in the Derby because of injury or whatever and went on to be great horses. You only get one chance. You know, you can't come back next year and run if you're sick or, you know, you stepped on a nail or, you know, it's over for you. You can't ever do it again. And, you know, to get a horse from when they buy them, you know, all the training, all the vet bills, all the nervous energy to get them just to their first race and then to find out they're pretty good and then they win a couple. And then about December it starts to hit you that, man, we might actually have a Derby horse. And then to actually get all the way to May and to qualify for the Derby, you know, every person that's part of that horse and all their friends or, you know, they're on pins and needles. I mean, it's a huge, huge deal. And just to be in it, let alone, you know, turn for home and have the lead, you know, to see all the emotion of all the people that actually win, like with Mind That Bird, that story. I mean, I saw the movie. I actually thought the movie was pretty good. I guess a lot of people didn't get to see it because it wasn't distributed nationally. But, I mean, that was they made it into a movie, and it's just an unbelievable story. You know, just two owners from New Mexico and a little old trainer in New Mexico that's never had a good horse in his life. You know, he's been training all these just little peon horses his whole life and trips into a Derby horse, you know, and then they to not only get there at 50-1, people thought you're nuts to even run him. They didn't even have enough money to fly him there. They had to put him in a trailer and drive a truck all the way from New Mexico to Kentucky just to get him there. And then he wins. I mean, that's just, you can't make that stuff up, and that can only happen in the Kentucky Derby because, you know, every other race in America, just about, you can run anytime you want, and, you know, for, you know, NBA finals happen every year, Final Fours happen every year, you know, this is the only time that you're three only once as a horse, and that's it, that's your only chance, and that's what makes it so special.
Well, brilliant analysis on today's show from Keeneland Dan of FatBaldGuyRacing.com, and that pales in comparison to what's available over at the website. Dan, I see you guys already have some packages up for this weekend. Why don't you tell our listeners what's available, what you guys do over there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you buy today, you get the races Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and it's $69 for that. Or if you're just going Saturday and that's the only time you want to go, it's $49. And, you know, we do the entire Churchill Downs card, plus obviously the Derby. But then we also do tracks across the country. So we'll have, you know, picks at Santa Anita. We'll have picks at Belmont. We'll have picks at Tampa. So when you're sitting at the track board and you look up and, you know, the next Churchill race isn't for 45 minutes and you don't know what you're going to do, you can look down at our sheet and say, well, here's three more races getting ready to run. You know, you can take a couple bucks and pass the time that way too, and you're not hung out to dry because we got you at all those different racetracks. So we did that several years ago, and everybody seemed to like it because the one thing everybody says to us is, you know, we won with your picks, but, you know, while those races weren't running, we bet five other races and lost, so I still lost money. And I'm like, well, we don't want that to happen, but so we got to help you in between too. So that's what we started doing.
Well, and the big thing, too, about you guys over there at FatBallGuyRacing.com is you guys are playing everything that you've picked as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I know there's some people out there that, you know, claim that they have this winner or that winner, and then you find out they didn't even play. Or there's a certain gentleman that was bragging how he qualified for the big contest this Saturday at the Kentucky Derby, and when they went and looked at his picks that he used in the contest, they weren't even the same picks that he sold people. So you're never going to see that with us. I mean, whoever we're playing, whoever we say on that sheet, that's who we're betting. That's who I'm going up to the window to bet. That's who all my friends are betting. I mean, we're not changing. We may bet a little bit different ticket than you because, you know, we don't know what ticket you're wanting to play with your buddies. But, you know, the main horse that's on that sheet is the horse that's who we're playing.
And that's FatBaldGuyRacing.com. And you can find Dan on Twitter at FatBaldGuyRacing, so racing minus the G. Dan, always a pleasure, man. Great to get you back on the show here. Thank you so much for joining us. Good luck this weekend, and hopefully we'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Great stuff there from Keeneland Dan of FatBaldGuyRacing.com. Tremendous analysis there. Great to get him on the show again. He was very good with it last year. Did extremely well in the Kentucky Oaks, very well in the Kentucky Derby as well. And those guys do great work throughout the year at all of those other tracks that they cover. So some really, really fine stuff over there at FatBaldGuyRacing.com. And again, that's at FatBaldGuyRacing, mind the G, on Twitter. Coming up again on Thursday, we'll have another edition of the Bettors Box, our MLB betting podcast. Thank you for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again on Thursday.